Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Season 3, Episode 12 of Mind Clickers, where it's time to click both heads in 2022. Today, I'm joined by an absolute goated coach today, the head coach for Space Station RLCS team. How are you, Chrome?
Doing pretty good. You gassed me up too much. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me, though, for real.
No worries. How's it been over in NA? Obviously, finished with Regional 3 quite a while ago now, and obviously preparing for London. How are the boys all feeling?
Yeah. We're going with the flow. I mean, we're confident. We're just trying to work on our kinks that we have and go from there, and just really getting ready to boot camp. And well, I guess we're not boot camping, but really like put into work to study these teams we're about to play for sure.
Love that. Love that. Obviously, first matchup versus an OCE team. I'm keen to watch that game. Definitely going to be staying up to watch it. I think that the tournament as a whole is going to, there's already a ton of interesting matchups, which I'm super keen to see as well. So it's definitely going to be, I think, a nice major to set the pace for a few teams. And then obviously with the lead into Saudi for the teams that are going to Saudi, and obviously the lead into Worlds, which is going to be awesome to see as well. But phenomenal. Love that. I guess we'll do it as we always do on Mind Clickers, which is sort of start a bit wide and then go a bit narrow throughout the episode. So tell us, and I'm super keen as well, how did you get into Rocket League, and what's that story, and like take us way back.
So yeah, I mean, back then, I mean, I was working like a full-time job, and I had a bunch of buddies that I've been gaming with. Basically, they used to be like former pros back in like console esports, and I've just been gaming with them for like the past decade when like League of Legends basically got popular. Then Counter-Strike wave happened. We were basically all playing those games, grinding to the highest levels and whatnot. And then they're just like, let's play this like indie game, Rocket League, basically on release, came out. We all like hopped into private matches, and we were just like basically could not hit the ball, but it was just like an overall joy. And at that time, like I wanted to be a professional player, but it just wasn't feasible back then for me. I couldn't really travel at a young age. I was playing like console esports like Halo, Call of Duty, yada yada, the whole nine. And I was working, I was just like, playing Rocket League on the side, and then I just after work I would just grind Rocket League, and it was just like really fun. And then there is like I found out that there's like ESL tournaments, which were like weeklies every like Sunday, I think it was. Can't remember. And I started competing later that year. So it was like the game dropped in July of 2015. I probably started competing like December-ish, and then really found a team in the next year before the season actually started for RLCS. And yeah, I was competing for about 3 years and got into coaching.
Love that. Now you mentioned you slipped it in there a little bit. You mentioned console like COD and Halo days. That just had the biggest setback for me because that was exactly what I used to play in the old day. Good old Modern Warfare 2.
Yeah. Oh man,
those were the days. You don't really get those days now, do you? So
no, you don't. It's crazy. Like just seeing like the communities back then compared to Rocket League. Just like how people are, I guess you could say.
Yeah, how toxic the lobbies used to be.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you'd hear everything under the sun. So you would grow thick skin really quick. And that's how I
love that.
So, yeah, that's pretty much how I probably got my personality, just like going at it with people.
Yeah. Love that. I guess it's built you and it's sort of molded you, I guess, into the previous player and coach you are today now, though. So we always have that sort of foundation that we start in, and we're always appreciative. So it's definitely awesome to see and definitely awesome to have that sort of resolve with. Love that. So I guess, sort of the same thing with me. I picked up the game and was pretty into it, but I didn't have a control at the time, so I was playing mouse and keyboard. So I actually stopped playing for probably about 2 or 3 years and then eventually picked it back up. So I wasn't there always throughout the time period. But, because at that time I think my Xbox controller wasn't working on my PC, and I'm like, I don't want to spend $30 to get a new controller to play this game. So I was like, but, obviously I found my way back into the pathway, so always grateful for that. Did you ever imagine, when you first picked up the game that you would ever end up, I guess, in a coaching position like you are now?
No, actually. I mean, honestly, like back then, I didn't really know where my future was going. I didn't really go to college. I was just in a bad state pretty much, and then just working like a full-time dead-end job, really, if you think about it. It's just like, And I always wanted to go pro. Like, I always dedicated a lot of time to just want to be a professional gamer. I'm just like, at that time. And then schooling really never interested me because I never really found like something I was too, like, I don't know, into at the time. And it was just something on the side. And honestly, it's not my type of game. Like, I usually played shooters. So it's like complete curveball in comparison to like what your traditional esports or gaming was back then.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just like the whole team thing just really like picked up with me, and I just wanted to keep playing. And I just did not expect it to get to this point, I guess.
Mm.
It's honestly just really getting lucky, I guess. There's not much else to say about it.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Did you play much traditional sport growing up? Were you involved in like
I played football, baseball. Never played soccer, I guess what you call it in the States. traditional sports for an American, I guess.
Mm, got that. Love that. The only reason I ask is I'm always interested whereby, I guess, previous coaches and players that I've grown up have sometimes played traditional sports, sometimes even at a high level, but then sometimes have just completely neglected traditional sports. And it's always interesting to see that sort of development of a mindset shift, you know, if whether they're going to coaching or whether they're going to a player position. It's really interesting to see that. So I guess, is most of your experience coaching, did that sort of originate from you as a player? And then you sort of just picked up the game, you knew the insides and outs, you knew what it took to be effective?
I mean, everything is subjective, right? I think personally for me, like I grew up with traditional sports, so I understood the whole team atmosphere type thing. Right. And that's something I've learned with like this day and age with kids. Kids are not really playing traditional or participating in traditional sports or playing video games, so they don't understand like the whole like camaraderie when it comes to teams and like really understanding that things are going to take time to improve.
Mm.
And for me as a player, I mean, I was considered toxic, I guess, but I was just a very vocal person. Like, yeah. I'm the type of guy, it's like, I don't want my time wasted, and I'm sure you guys don't want your time wasted either. Let's try. I mean, we don't actually have to win anything, or like, and like, I just want us to try and see if we can make some improvements and strides towards, you know, being a better player, better team.
Mm.
And I felt like my personality back then, in hindsight, was better off for coaching because I'm very blunt. And sometimes it's hard to hear the truth, like, because some people feel like there's nothing they could change. And
yeah,
I felt like I definitely have had a lot more success because of that reason alone.
Yeah, no, for sure. Love that. And you sort of mentioned in there as well, the importance of a team environment, even a team culture. I think I had a chat with Eclipse last time and Nick as well about this. You know, having a team culture, especially within esports, is such a crucial thing. I feel like more so importantly in Rocket League as well, whereby, you know, you don't have five players on a team like CS or League of Legends. You've got three players. So establishing a team culture whereby, you know, you go to LANs and you're overexorbitant and yelling or you're a bit more reserved is such an important thing to do. So what's your take on, I guess, obviously ending up where you are now on Space Station, was it a matter of sort of developing that team culture over time and sort of facilitating it to the idea that you think is a really good sort of team outlet?
I mean, I wouldn't say I'm the best for like having the best team culture, because in my eyes, I feel like everything's very difficult online in comparison to boot camping. I feel like I can do a lot better, but online it's hard to read emotions and body language and all the fun stuff. And honestly, it's just, I'm more of like that fourth person, like I'm the fourth teammate, like, but I'm allowed to like critique more than because I'm not playing. Mm-hmm. And just making sure that guys are just keeping their heads on a swivel and just staying focused. And honest, obviously, yeah, there's a lot of synergy there when it comes to chemistry that helps out a lot. So yeah, just making sure we're vibing as a team and making sure it's not like, you know, we're coming in and clocking in like it's work and it's like, oh, let's dip out afterwards or whatever. Just making sure everyone is just like cool with each other and, you know, chit-chatting, talking about random things, real life stuff, sports. And just, I don't know, being human with each other, I guess you could say.
Yeah, love that. I absolutely love the fact you brought that up because I think it's one of the most important things. Because I've seen it previously in a few things that I've coached and sort of experience that I've had. And you mentioned it, that sort of clock-in, clock-out culture that some teams have where it's like, okay, what time we scrim? We're scrimming at 5 p.m. Okay, what's the time now? 4:58. All right, I better jump on. I better, you know, have a chat with the boys. Bang, straight into scrims. Okay, what's the time? All right, 7 o'clock, I'm done. And then you just go do your own thing. But having, you know, even if it's that extra half an hour beforehand, extra half an hour afterhand, it allows for so much rapport building, and I think that's so crucial when you're able to sort of facilitate that and you know, get involved a little bit more. You know, whether even if it's like having a movie night or something with the guys, you know, that's something we did and have done quite a few times, and you know, just plan out a couple of different casual games. I think it's important to have that sort of outlet that you can sort of build rapport with your players. So it's sort of, you know, it shows you care as well, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Love that.
No, that's definitely something we did too for like when we boot camp for the LA major. We would just, you know, we would get our 4 hours of scrims around there, have our tough talks or arguments or debates, whatever it may be, replay sessions. And then after that, we'd go get ice cream and, you know, shoot some basketball hoops and we'd be having a good time. I mean, at the end of the day, scrimming isn't fun. Putting in the work is not fun, but we know at the end of the day, it's towards a goal of winning, right? Mm. And all those rough sessions, I mean, it pays off, and it makes it feel so much more like more valuable. And when something that you want happens and what you achieve, it means much more, and it's a better feeling than, you know, coming in and clocking in and then, you know, hoping for the best, I guess.
Yeah, love that. Awesome. Sort of backing up on the end of that, something I thought about is, I guess NA with NA and their scrim culture is something that I'm really interested in as well. So for you guys over there, is it common for you guys to like two scrims a night? Do you ever push to three? Sometimes it's okay to do one. What's your sort of approach with that?
In the past, I felt like if we were lacking practice, or just I feel like we needed a grind. I mean, I've tried everything under the sun. I mean, I've done 3 hour scrims. I've done 2 hours of break and then a 3 hour third scrim after the hour.
The block.
Done one a day, I've done two a day, but it all depends on the team, I guess, right?
Yeah.
When I was with Energy in the past, we just did two a day because we were, you know, 100% locked in most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And with my newer team, SSG at the time, younger roster, completely lack of leadership at the time, there are times where we would just get a bad hour scrim, and then we would honestly have to schedule another scrim. And that's sometimes what I would do. I would schedule three scrims just to make sure the guys are grinding. And honestly, I've seen it paid off a lot. But I mean, nowadays, I wouldn't say we do three. I mean, we're going to be doing three at the major because obviously it's the major.
Yeah.
But right now, I think the perfect amount of time right now is 2 hours, unless we have cancels or we have a day we take off for whatever reason. We'll maybe schedule a third scrim.
Yeah.
But I think two is the perfect amount because it gets to that point where you're just mentally fatigued, and endurance at the end of the day isn't really going to help in that sense because it's just a different type of fatigue. It's not like your body is just like tired, like from like over exertion. It's more so like it's kind of like your mind becomes like a vegetable. You mm-hmm. want to do the right things, but you just can't do it.
Yeah.
It's like a weird thing. I don't know if a lot of people experience that in sports, I guess, but
yeah, sort of that sort of cognitive fatigue sort of sets in.
Yeah, you're just mentally focused for 5 minutes straight, and that's just not normal in like other esports.
Mm.
There's a lot of time in between rounds or minutes that you have that you can just like regain focus.
Yeah, I actually thought about that the other day, actually, because I was watching a Valorant game, and I was thinking like how much downtime they have compared to Rocket League. And it's such a good point you bring up because they do. And I think within League as well, you do, you know, when you're walking back to lane, you've got like 30 seconds to sort of take a break, take a breather, hydrate sort of stuff. But with Rocket League, it's literally, and I guess, you know, the comparison of games is I sort of, you can make a point, but with Rocket League, it is really 5 minutes, you know, even more sometimes, really hyper-focused in, constantly communicating. In terms of demanding games, would you put it as one of the most demanding games?
Oh man, it's up there. I'd probably say right up there with like StarCraft, I would assume.
Yep.
What's that other esport? I just lost my train of thought with the other esport, but I would say it's up there, man. Cause you gotta be mentally locked in nonstop. And then even then after the game you have 30 seconds to a minute to recover.
Literally.
And on top of that, things aren't going your way. You have to obviously regain your mental at the time too. It's the most, I feel like, most mentally fatiguing game right now in an esports, I would say.
Yeah. The way that I sort of look at it is you can sort of have comparisons towards traditional sports, and it's sort of like Rocket League is 5 minutes high intensity burst. It's sort of like, you know, fast anaerobic sprints almost it probably wouldn't be anaerobic. But it's very high paced, and it's definitely one of those games. And I like the comparison to StarCraft because I used to coach StarCraft a bit. Previous GM here myself.
Yeah.
But it's definitely got to be up there. What's your take on, I guess, people who look at Rocket League and are like, oh, it's not a tier, you know, it's not a top tier game, it's not a tier one game, it's like tier two or tier three?
I mean, at the end of the day, it's a niche category, right? Everyone's used to MMOs, MOBAs, shooters, just your typical trifecta of games, right? And Rocket League comes out of left field with like car soccer and like flying and stuff like that. It's like, that's not the norm, right? Like at the end of the day. And I mean, it's not for everyone, right? And I would not be surprised why people call it tier three and whatnot, because at the end of the day, it's not that, it's not that amount of like, I guess, replayability when it comes to Rocket League. Mm. And unfortunately, I'm sure maybe down the line, if they release like a future Rocket League or whatever on a different engine, they can do more things to make people want to come back.
Yep.
But I feel like Rocket League is just like, it's you appreciate it if you don't play it, but it's not like going to be like the focal point of esports, right? It's not going to be your battle royales, your shooters and all that.
Yeah.
So I understand from both ends, but at the end of the day, our viewership's insane.
Yeah, for sure.
Probably the easiest to understand esport in comparison to anything out there right now. And it's just like what you can show your parents, your grandparents, anyone just that doesn't know anything about the game. Can be like, oh, he just shot it on the net. Okay, I understand. Oh, he saved it. All right. It's very simple.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, from a viewership perspective, it's such an easy game to pick up, and I think that's why, in that regard, it has such a massive advantage over other games. Like, if you put a spectator down and watched Rocket League versus a spectator sitting down and watching League of Legends, there's no difference, you know? Well, there is a difference. I didn't mean it like that, but there's a major difference in the way that they're going to perceive it. It's definitely crazy. You mentioned a little bit earlier as well, and I think this is one that I was really excited to have a chat with you about. And I guess that's when you look at a Rocket League team, and especially the younger guys, right? Obviously, you've got Lanyel on your team, you know, the young gun, and I've got Fever. Albeit there is a 2-year age difference. Is Daniel 15?
Daniel turned 15 in December, so yeah, he's fresh blood into the Rocket League scene for sure.
Okay, yeah, for sure, yeah. I think Fever's turning 18 in this. 18 this December, 17 at the moment. What was your experience with Daniel in the start? Because obviously those young guys, you know, some have a different approach towards the game. Some want to constantly grind it. Some want to sort of take a little bit of a perceived break. But I guess, you know, previously I used to coach a bit of, you know, CS and StarCraft as well. And I coached a 15-year-old and a 16-year-old, and their mindset was literally come home from school, I've got 8 hours. I'm spending it 8 hours grinding. I'm just going to constantly play. And it was sort of, you know, sort of having that talk about, you know, the reinforcement of breaks, the reinforcement of positively, you know, having different sessions where it's a little bit more effective grinding. So what was that like with Daniel, and, you know, what was that approach with him?
So, with Daniel, it was either him or Beastman at the time, and we wanted to take the chance on Daniel because he's just a newer player, better to mold him. And, I mean, we knew his background. He played traditional sports. He played basketball as a kid. Dad was, I think, one of his coaches or whatever. His dad's a nice guy, by the way. I don't know if you ever talked to him. But, when he came onto the team, man, he just was super motivated. He wanted to learn. There's no screwing around with him. So he was, like, probably in terms of, like, one of the younger players, more mature when it came to that team atmosphere. I mean, obviously he's a kid. He's going to mess around and have fun because Arsenal, you know, Arsenal's like his bigger brother on the team. That. So if Arsenal starts trolling, he'll start trolling, you know, that type of environment.
Love
so that. He really clicks with everyone, and we really do appreciate him. I mean, right now it's out to that point with him that when we play scrims a lot, it just becomes monotonous. It's just the same old, you get bored. So right now he's just been taking breaks here and there and playing some other games, but now he's been putting in the work again and he's finding his form again, which is great. But yeah, it's just been the same thing like you said before, like finding that balance, you know, coming home from school and playing Rocket League all the time and getting burnt out. That he hit that point, I would say, after LA Major, and now we're figuring that out and going with the flow with that. But he's been a breath of fresh air with our team. For our previous iteration of the roster, it was just really negative and lack of motivation, I guess you could say. And with him, it's just like everyone wants to win now. And that's our plan of attack right now. It's just really focused on getting him comfortable and going from there.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. I love that approach. And I think that's such a really good position that you're in to sort of support him and sort of build his character up. You know, that's the way I look at, you know, sort of working with Thieves, sort of helping him, you know, understand, you know, what's outside of Rocket League as well, helping him with other life skills and sort of helping him build his character up. I think it's such a crucial thing that we can do as coaches. And I think it's such an important role that we have as well, which is sort of a privilege at the same time that I see it. So,
oh, and it's the same with Daniel too at the LA Major. He's never flown before. He flew to the boot camp. He's not really a social kid, so just making sure he's comfortable. Like, if he needs me to plug in all his stuff for him or make sure he's comfortable, I'll do anything in my power to make him comfortable because he's new to this stuff. Yeah. Never really gone out, you know, never experienced anything like that. So, making sure he's, you know, enjoying himself is definitely the hallmark of anything that I want to achieve with this roster, is make sure everyone's having fun and understanding that at the end of the day, this is our job, and you know, we can have fun with it or not, you know. So with him, making sure he's comfortable, the other guys as well, and it honestly builds better rapport too, in my opinion, because you got each other's backs at the end of the day, and that's how I feel with when it comes to like team atmospheres as well.
Yeah, 100%. You just reminded me of a funny thing, because I guess when we went to Sweden, it was Fever's first time flying as well. So that was definitely a trip for him. Because I remember him before the plane trip, he's like, I'm going to do this. I'm going to play my Switch. I'm going to watch a movie. I'm going to watch some anime on my Switch. And then he ended up doing none of it.
That's literally how it goes for everyone. I'm the same way.
It was such an interesting thing. But, you know, being able to experience that at a young age is phenomenal, and I can only imagine, I guess, the excitement Daniel was in. Does Daniel, I guess, because obviously LA Major was still in NA, how does Daniel feel about going over to London now? What's his mindset, and you know, how does he feel about it?
I mean, he hates flying in terms of, like, it's just long. He's just, like, he's got a lot of energy. He wants to just play games, and he's the type of person, he's like, I just want to play the tournament. He's like, I want to play it right now. Like, that's the type of person he is. He hates all the in-between.
Yeah,
and you know, I don't blame him. It sucks at the end of the day. So, yeah, I mean, he's a trip though. He's a fun person to hang around. Mm-hmm. Definitely finding finding more about him, I guess you could say, just in terms of like his personality, because he's always been like hiding behind a screen, you know, and just getting to know him has been an absolute treat. He's a great kid.
I love that. I love that. And for him to, I guess, step up on stage, you know, at the LA Major and sort of embrace the crowd, I think that's something that I can reflect back and really have that sort of solid image in my head of him really, you know, getting involved with the crowd, embracing it. That's a big thing for a 15-year-old to do. Like, I couldn't have imagined myself in front of a massive crowd at 15.
That's just keeping a mentally understanding of the fact that, hey, you're probably going to own goal. You're probably going to miss every easy ball imaginable that you know you'll hit every 100 times out of 100 times. That's literally the thing that we've done when we first picked them up, just to get them mentally comfortable. Like, listen, you're going to troll. You're gonna mess up. You're probably going to throw a series. You know, it's not a big deal. At the end of the day, there's always another series. There's always another match going forward.
Yep.
And the other guys are the same way. Like, we have his back. I mean, if you watch the cons, like, we're like, Dan, don't worry about it. It's not a big deal. We're chilling. We got this. And you could see the difference he's made when it came to playing that Dignitas and Pioneer series. He was night and day better in that V1 series and in that Quesos series. Mm-hmm. So he's been finding his footing, and that's all we could ask for.
Love that. Absolutely love it. That sort of insight is so crucial. I love it. I think it's one of those things whereby, you know, they sort of understand that, you know, you are going to make a mistake. And then once they can sort of come to terms with that, because I think a lot of players have ambivalence with that, as soon as they understand, it's like, okay, you know, I'm going to mess up, but I'm just going to go and have fun. I'm going to enjoy myself. And I think we started to see that a lot. I guess after the major, we sort of saw a lot of people obviously talking about Queso, you know, obviously their first big major and obviously a massive performance from those guys. Sort of started talking about that have fun meta and just go out and have fun and just whatever happens, happens sort of thing. I think it's an interesting way to look at it. Do you agree with that sort of just go out, have fun, doesn't matter what happens?
I mean, I think it works out for younger people, younger kids, because at the end of the day, they stress out about everything, placebos, the whole nine yards. And the fact that you have to go into a match and play, it's super stressful. And you got to understand your kids, you're young, you have something amazing in front of you. Why not make the most of it?
Yep.
Things are obviously not going to go your way, but if you're, you know, getting upset about it and getting super stressed about it, you're not going to play well either way, you know, most of the time. So I definitely see how that works for them. And obviously a lot of teams adopted that too, because at the end of the day, like the in-between, like I said, it all sucks and it's super stressful. It's just like, you got to make sure you find a way to make it to where it works for you guys. Right. Cause that whole like meta of have fun isn't going to work for everyone. Right. A lot of people need to be serious and a lot of people, need to have fun, and for them it works, you know?
Yeah. There's definitely a few people that I can think of off the top of my head, which I won't say who they are. They probably don't really like that have fun meta. And they're a little bit more serious, a little bit more dialed in.
I'm that type of person. I'm more dialed in. So yeah, I'm the same way. Like, but I can understand both sides of the coin, you know? So whatever works, works, right? You can't complain. Like, your car is ugly and you need to change your car and it makes you play better. Hey, you know,
change it up.
Whatever works. Exactly.
Love that. Now, where do you, and I guess I'm sort of going off my own experience here. I guess obviously with Sweden being my first major that I went to, and I just remember being on the comms. I don't know if you heard this story. I don't know if CJ ever. Well, he spread it around everywhere. But it was the first series that we had versus Endpoint. And I was on the comms at the back, and I forgot to mute my mic, and it was like,
I think
we were one goal up, and it was like 40 seconds, and apparently I was breathing so hard it sounded like a tornado, so they couldn't even hear the comms between each other. It was just like, you know, massive sound. Where do you find, I guess, the sweet spot of comms as a coach, like, I guess, especially in a LAN environment? Because I guess there's times where we can, you know, we want to say something, you know, maybe we just let it be. We maybe want to, you know, intervene. You know, where do you find the sweet spot, and where do you sort of micromanage your way around that?
I mean, it's tough. That's one of the hardest parts about coaching, right? Knowing when to interject and give your point of view, or when to just let the guys figure it out for themselves. And that's something I'm still working on to this day. But back then, especially when it came to LANs, they had ruling where you can't communicate in between, I guess, goals or whatever, or whenever the game's live. But there was never that ruling when it came to being at home. And like I said, with my previous roster, when I was with Energy, I was more of the guy who would, you know, kind of hype, but obviously give the strategy beforehand. And then in between games, I'll chirp in and stuff like that. But with this roster, when I had, it was AXP, Cypical, and Arsenal, they would never really like communicate with each other about what the plan of attack is. So I was pretty much that leader. So I would chime in between goals, or definitely in between games. And right now with this roster, they're more vocal. So right now I'm trying to take a back seat more often, and then obviously interject when I feel like I need to make sure the guys are adapting and understanding what the other team's doing and what we can counteract with. And that's just an ongoing, I feel like it all depends, like I said, with the roster that you have in front of you, right? If you have a roster that's just, they're completely communicating with each other, they're vibing really well, maybe you just need to be a hype man. Maybe you need to make sure they're just staying focused. Everything is interchangeable when it comes to coaching. That's the dynamic of it, right? There's no one way of coaching fits all, right?
Yep.
So it's all about the blend of players in the coach. And right now, like I said, that's just like an ongoing battle, like knowing when to chime in. I mean, just depends on the scenario, right? If no one's being vocal, then, you know, maybe chime in.
Yeah.
That's usually what I do.
Yeah, for sure. I love that. And I think, you know, as a coach, even as a player sometimes, we always are sort of almost switching hats in different situations. And I think it's a good way to sort of understand that there isn't always going to be just one set way that, you know, we go into a day, we go into day one, and it's going to go like this. You know, today's going to go like this. I'm going to say this during this time or that during that time. You just have to be, you know, adaptable. And I think being able to sort of understand when things come up, you can sort of intervene. And, you know, sometimes it's almost like, I think about it like the butterfly effect. Like, if I hadn't have said that one thing, maybe that didn't lead to a little bit more pressure in that next game. Maybe that didn't lead to the goal. It didn't lead to the win. You know, always sort of reflecting back on those things. And I think that's a big thing that so many people do nowadays. Is that something you boys do as well, sort of reflect back to your previous wins and losses and have a look and think, you know, what went right, what went wrong, what can we do, you know, next time, and what's our approach towards that?
Yeah. That's an ongoing struggle with us, especially too, because there's times where we just do not have, you know, good results, where we were really inconsistent. And I feel like a lot of that stemmed from, you know, sometimes we're having really bad practice in terms of like we're not mentally locked in. And that's usually the case for what I see personally. And then the success stories of when we have good events is if everything's clicking, right? And yeah, that's an ongoing battle too with us. Like that's the thing too with some teams. Like with us, we have like a lack of maturity sometimes. And that's what kind of holds us back, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. And we have our set play style. We have our set way of playing. It's just continuing to build upon it and, you know, making sure we're making strides to just having a better day every day. Even if we get absolutely destroyed in the scrim 7-0, it doesn't matter. As long as we are putting our best foot forward, that's the ultimate end game for us right now. It's just making sure we are at least getting something out of it.
Yeah, no, for sure. 100%. Sort of assimilate with that. Similar to the things that I said with the boys in Sweden. It was literally, you know, we were going up against, who was it at the time? I think we had, Endpoint into FaZe, into obviously GC, we don't talk about that series, into Furia, and obviously Sweat Furia on the stage. And literally all I remember saying was, you know, I don't care if we get swept. I don't care if we get perfect swept. I just want you boys to go out there and, you know, because at the end of the day, and I sort of had this going through my head, at the end of the day, every single player at this LAN is going to close their door, they're going to lock their suitcase, and they're going to leave the hotel, every single one of them.
Yep.
They're all going to do the exact same thing. But what's going to differentiate you is if you're happy or not, if you can walk out there with a smile on your face, or if you're going to think, I should have done a bit better, I should have calmed a little bit more, I should have been there for the boys, I should have been a bit happier. So if they can, you know, meet me at the front of the hotel on that final day and say, you know, I really did try my best, then that's all I want. And that was sort of, I felt like gave us that momentum to really just, you know, it doesn't matter what happens. Let's just have some fun. Let's enjoy ourselves. We put in the work to get here. So let's just enjoy it. And I think there's, you know, multiple different ways to look at it, but that was I feel like a way that worked for us, which was awesome.
That's the perfect way to put it, because at the end of the day, you don't get lands often.
Yeah,
I've been preaching that since when I first started coaching, when I was with NRG at the time. It's like we're going to every single LAN every other month, and out of nowhere, COVID comes out of left field and takes out everything for the past 2.5 years. And it's like, wow, you really take things for granted back then, because then you're forced to play online, and no one wants to play online. Online sucks. And then when you get to the LAN, at the end of the day, making sure the guys realize, like, listen, we don't get these opportunities that often. We barely made it. We got lucky that Oxygen didn't make it for the LA Major, and then we barely made it, and we made an insane performance to get in top three. Like, at the end of the day, when it comes to LAN, anyone can win, per se. Maybe not anyone, but there'll be a different winner expected than what you normally expect. Like, no one really predicted G2 to win that tournament, except for, like, maybe a handful of people. Mm-hmm. It's like, at the end of the day, like, as long as everything's clicking and you're vibing and you're putting in the effort, more often than not, you're going to succeed.
Yeah, I love that. It sort of reminds me of something I saw last night. I was watching sort of a triathlete thing, and it was sort of, you know, we don't come to the competition, we don't come to the main day as a practitioner or as a person who practices. We come as a competitor. You know, it doesn't matter what happens in practice. It doesn't matter all those things. All that matters is that come game day, you know, you bring it all and you give it your all. And I think that having that mindset, because I know that I guess I've had a chat with people in the past and they're like, you know, I wish I had done a bit better at this LAN, or I wish I should have, you know, said this, or sort of regrets and sort of things that happen over time. And everyone's going to have regrets. You know, I've got regrets.
Yeah.
But I think just being able to sort of acknowledge them, acknowledge maybe where things, you know, could have gone differently, and sort of just build on that for the future, I think it's the best way to do it.
But at the end of the day too, like, competition is the best practice you're ever going to get too.
Exactly.
I mean, it's, you get to see who you are as an individual and who you are as a team and what you can and can't do as a team and what other teams you expected they're going to do compared to what they actually do. And that's 100%. Like the best way to practice as a team, because then you figure out, okay, if we do this, it's not going to work, because we know it's not going to work for us. Even though it works in practice, we know for a fact that maybe it's just unrealistic. So it helps us prepare better in a sense and make sure we are translating our practice over, which makes us more successful. Because once we're translating our practice over, we're going to be consistent. That's pretty much how it goes.
Yeah, literally, 100%. Sort of on the topic of that, and I had a chat with Eclipse on the last episode, and I think maybe you were there for it. We had a chat about timeouts, and I sort of, you know, sort of the importance of calling a timeout. And I think it's a really interesting area, because obviously different coaches have a different reason for calling timeouts. Sometimes, literally, if CJ's like, nah, call a timeout, I'm jumping into free play. I'm just like, all right, I'm calling a timeout. I'll let him take the rein on that. What's your take on a timeout, and how do you feel about when is the right time to call on?
That's the pickle that I've been in. There are times where I don't call a timeout, even though I feel like we have everything in control, and there's timeouts where maybe it would be good to gas the other team or just kill their momentum. Yeah, it's tough, man. I mean, 2 minutes isn't a lot of time, but it also kind of is. It's, like I said, it's all situational, right? Like, I had this time where I didn't call a timeout against FaZe. We were up 2-0, and I think we were on winner's side, right? And I think it was regional 2. Mm-hmm. Or regional 1, I can't remember, where we were up 2-0 and they took 2 straight. I could have called a timeout there and maybe kill their momentum, and then I didn't. And I didn't call a timeout for when they're on match point. They won 4 straight.
Right.
And then when it came to Lower Brack, I made that transition where we took the first 2 games, and I think they took 1 game, and I called a timeout immediately. Like, listen, let's make sure we reinstate what we're focusing on and make sure this is what they're trying to accomplish. Let's stop that. And it helped us. So, like I said, it's all subjective as well, and timeouts, it's tough, man, because like I feel like there's no right way and wrong way to call timeout. It's just making sure the guys are able to, like, I guess, mentally reset. I don't know. I just don't feel like personally there's a lot of time when you call timeout to really reinvigorate everyone, I guess, because feel like if you're down in the dumps, maybe, I don't know, maybe one, it depends on maybe how you phrase it, but I don't really see a lot of people have success with timeouts. More often than not, my opinion.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You know, interesting. I like that.
Because, like, we could go down 2-0 in a series. I call timeout. I could, you know, reiterate what I want to say and whatnot. We called a timeout, like, with G2, and it's like, okay, we're down 2. We helped kill their momentum. They still took that third game, and then we bounce back. It's like,
right.
I don't know. Maybe it's just all about, like, what clicks in that time frame. Maybe I'm completely wrong. I don't know. It's just, like, my opinion on it when it comes to timeouts.
You know, that's what it's all about, and that's what I love to hear, man. Everyone has their own opinion, and whether that, you know, be right or wrong, whether my opinion be right or wrong, it's all about, you know, sort of understanding, you know, there is different ways, and there's no perfect way. No one can have a perfect way of calling a timeout, and no one can know when the most perfect moment was to call a timeout. You just can't.
Maybe if it was a 5-minute timeout, I'd be like, yeah, then you can really strategize and really figure out and nail in what you want to accomplish, and everyone can reset. But when it comes to timeouts too, with the 2 minute going back, it's like you get your statement out and then everyone just like calms down for like 2 minutes because you really have no time to like really have a discussion or just like maybe just like chill. They have to like re-lock in because being mentally focused is like the key for Rocket League.
Yeah, that's the big one I was thinking about more recently as well is like you could be the last minute of a game, you're really starting to find your foot. Oh, God, I got to take a sip of water again.
I'm right ahead of you with that.
What was I saying? So you could be like the last minute of a game and you're really starting to find your momentum. You're really starting to find your foot. And maybe you weren't doing that for the rest of the 4 minutes. And then you call a timeout. And you lose that sort of grasp on that momentum that you were really starting to gain. So it is really interesting. And I guess it's sort of like, I feel like there are situations where coaches call, you know, a timeout, you know, whether it be down 3 games. Some even call a timeout game 1 just because it's like they've had a really poor first game. I remember during a regional, we called a timeout. We were 3-1 up and we called a timeout. And everyone in Twitch chat thought we were just trolling, and which was
I did something like that too. I've done something like that. No worries. I've done it when it was at 3-2.
Okay,
that's when I did it. We won the game. I think it was the game 5, right? Going into that game 6, I called it. I was like, "Listen, let's reinforce what we want to accomplish," and it worked out. It's the same thing too. Like we go down in the series, or like when that series that I talked about with FaZe, where they took those 2 games. And it's like I didn't really want to call a timeout because we, as a team, we understood like this: we want to accomplish or what we want to accomplish. Mm-hmm. But then in hindsight, it's like, damn, maybe we could have just called it just to kill the momentum a little bit.
Yeah,
which we did in the future. It's just like a learning experience, right? It because at the end of the day, I'm discussing with my players; they're discussing with me what's best bet, and. As a team, we're learning what's best to do in certain situations and going with the flow.
Mm, yeah, it's such an interesting area. And it's such an interesting that different teams do differently. It's sort of what has always been your thought of, and I know it's been popular, sort of looking at other teams and seeing what they're doing and then trying to replicate that, you know, whether it be team culture or whether it be play style even. What's your thoughts on sort of replicating and trying to take notes or, you know, even copy in some regards different teams?
I mean, for us, it's more so like a lot of it's like maybe copying cultures of other teams, because a lot of the successful rosters right now are, they're culturally just better teams. They're not, I want to say better on the field.
Yep.
They're just better teams. They vibe better. They do, they understand that it's the main focus is, you know, scrims and practice. So let's make the most of it. Mm-hmm. And I feel like that's something that G2 does really, really well. And BDS does really well. Like, their culture, their environment is just leaps ahead of everyone else.
Mm.
When it comes to like in-game strategies, I feel like everyone kind of copied us in our play style from way back in season X, because the meta right now is super counterattack heavy. And I felt like as a team, when I was coaching my team with Reddles, Cypical, and Arsenal, that's something we pioneered back then. And teams are finding ways to do it better than us. And that's just something that we know how to counter it. Like, we know how to beat it. Let's reinforce that. The same thing when we played Queso, that solo play, counterattack-esque play style, not challenging, heavy as second man and going for a lot of solo plays. That's something we did back in Season X, and they're doing it better than us. So it's just like, we know how to counter it. Let's adapt, you know? And that's something we did, and we almost won that series. And, it's just like right now, we know how to play the game. It's more so let's be mentally there and be a better team.
I love that. I love that from you, Chrome. That's a really good way to look at it. And I really agree with that. I think it's, there are, you know, there are times to sort of look at what other teams are doing and sort of understand that what we're doing, we're on the right path even. And sort of just knowing that, okay, you know, we're putting in the work, we're on the right track. Let's just keep going. Let's just see where it leads us.
I mean, at the end of the day too, sorry to cut you off. It's like, if you're playing the other team's play style, you're not going to have success. You want to make sure you find a way to make them play your play style.
Yep.
When I look at teams, like for instance, not trying to rag on them, but when I look at EG back in the LA Major, when we scrimmed them or whenever we played them or whenever I watched them play, they didn't really have their own unique play style. They were a team that just like adapted to what you were doing. So they never really had that consistent play style to where they had that fallback, like let's make them play our play style. Them, they, I don't know, it just seemed like they just wanted to go with the flow. And I feel like that only gets you so far. And G2 is a perfect example where they make people play their play style, which is why they're successful. And that's something that I think is phenomenal from their end, right? And that's something we want to reiterate for us, because it shows, like, if you're comfortable on the field, you can dictate the pace, you can dictate what the other team does that you want them to do.
Yeah.
That's pretty much the end game, right? Because a lot of the teams, they all play very similar. I mean, when it comes to those teams, you want to get a refresher, like, just to take a peek at their tendencies. That's really healthy to do. Mm-hmm. And, it's just constantly reiteration when it comes to just everything that we built for a foundation and what we want to accomplish.
I love that. I completely agree that if you're able to go into a series, if you're in a regional or a major, and you're playing the playstyle that you want to play, that's just going to only help your confidence. That's only going to help sort of create that resonance between scrims and practice and you actually playing on game day. It's going to help sort of smallen the divide. And it's something we've always talked about, something CJ's always talked about, just wanting to make sure that we go out there. It doesn't matter, you know, whoever we're versing. If we're going up against Emperor, we're going up against NRG, let's just try and play our style and play the way we want to play. Because at least, you know, even win or lose, we'll know that we were able to play the style that we wanted to play and we weren't just sort of getting bullied around on the pitch. I think that's always a way that we've looked at it.
I mean, Rocket League is also that type of game. It's that esport where if you're feeling it mechanically, it doesn't matter how much strategy you have to. Like, you could just completely just obliterate the other team just because you're just mechanically on compared to them.
Yeah.
And there's not that many esports like that right now. I would say, like, maybe Halo's like that, where you could just completely make strategy null and void just because of how good you are mechanically that day. Mm-hmm. And that's something you got to come to terms with. Like, that's a great mindset to have, too, because you play your play style and maybe we just weren't playing our best that day. Let's try some new things in this certain areas that we messed up or what we could have done better to maybe counteract their mechanics. That's also, at the end of the day, it's practice, right? You're learning from your competition, your matches that you have that don't go your way to help improve your team in the long run, right?
Mm-hmm. for sure. I love it. Now I think there was one. Yeah, so I guess this is a topic that I had a chat with, I think, Nick for quite a while, and I had a chat with Jojo about it on the show as well. And it's this whole idea of visualization. Have you ever, I guess, whether it be on NRG or on SSG, had a chat with the guys about sort of, you know, that sort of pre-game warm-up, you know, you're sitting at your computer, you're about to go into the game, and sort of that visualization methodology of sort of thinking through things, reinstating, you know, positive reinforcement and having that sort of reflection back towards times where you're winning and, you know, that sort of really good group synergy at all?
I mean, we do a lot of like manifesting, like okay. In my eyes, when I competed, I envision myself winning or lifting up the trophy or just like having that winner's interview, like just knowing you're going to look at the crowd or whatever. That's like my thing that I do now too, is like I manifest winning a major or a Worlds, because that's like the next step for me. And making sure, like, in my mind, like, these guys look like they're having fun, they're killing it, they're doing their thing.
Mm-hmm.
And for them, it's the same thing, too. Like, making sure that before they hop on that stage, they're just constantly thinking positive things. And they're, at the end of the day, gassing them up, making sure, like, listen, you guys are the best thing since sliced bread. You guys are, you know, you guys are the guys that people want to look to, you know, and want to be.
Yep.
Use that as motivation. Like, and let's work together. Let's do it. You know, let's kill it.
Yeah, love that, man. And that can sort of help lead into that, you know, optimal state of flow, even, you know, even in game one. You know, we talk about, you know, the flow state and that perfect balance between where, you know, you have that transformation of time where everything feels slow because you're so dialed in, you're in the movement, you're feeling confident. You know, when you sort of preamp that up during that warm-up phase, you can sort of almost go into game one already in a state of flow, already feeling warm, already feeling connected with, you know, the guys beside me. And I think that's such a powerful ability to do. And there's, you know, a couple of teams that have done it well in the past, but a lot of teams sometimes do struggle to sort of get into that game one. And it's something we always, you know, sometimes struggle well as well.
We're the same.
Yeah, just trying to get into that game one. And, you know, even in scrims, we're like, game one, warm up. But there always will be, you know, that team that, you know, does that. But then it's, the, I guess, the ability to sort of counteract that and say, all right, you know, that was a bit of a warm-up. You know, game two, let's go and play our game. Which sort of leads me to the topic of sort of the whole identity of, okay, it's time for it, you know, the reverse sweep. I feel like the reverse sweep is built up in so many people's minds as this giant mountain that we have to sort of climb over. It's like it's impossible to do now. It barely happens. Let's just, you know, and that sort of leads to a decrease in motivation sometimes, a decrease in confidence for some guys. What's always been your take in terms of a reverse sweep, whether it be a best of five or a best of seven?
I mean, for us, we don't really, like, take too much thought about it. Like, oh, wow, we have to reverse sweep this. Oh, my God. It's more so with us. It's like, we know what we need to do. Let's do it this game. And if it works out, we'll talk like, damn, these guys are crapping their pants. What we're doing is working. They're going to have to adapt to us. And then game by game, like, we'll come back. And that's something that with this roster, we're really good at, bouncing back. Beautiful. I feel like our roster right now, our problem is starting strong. I feel like getting in that flow state right out the gate is definitely the toughest thing. But I feel like that equates to the type of practice we have.
Yep.
Our inconsistent practice leads to us not locking in right away, and we start off weak. It's the same thing in our scrims. Our scrims, we start off slow, and then we come in and we win the series from the tail end. And that's a good thing to have in your back pocket, right, at the end of the day, but we just got to find that balance, right? That's the hardest part, and that's something we got to continue to work towards. But when it comes to our mentality, it's like, we know what we want to do. Like, we went down 3-0 against G2. We almost reverse sweep them. It's like, okay, this is why they're beating us. Let's stop doing this. Let's adapt here. Let's try this. And we try something. It works. It's been working. Brings us back. And at the end of the day, we're thinking in our minds like, oh my God, they're crapping their pants. They're going to game six. Oh wow. It's Neo Tokyo. Oh no, it's Champions Field. Like,
yeah.
Like for us, it's like, we're still in a series no matter what. We've reverse sweeped, I think, like 3 or 4 times this season.
Yeah.
And almost reverse sweeped a few times. So for us, we know we have it in our back pocket now. We have that confidence that we can win a series even if we're getting destroyed the first two games.
Mm-hmm. Love that. Yeah, it's crazy. I think that it is such a, you know, difference between some teams and how they do it. Some teams sort of acknowledge it as, you know, let's just go goal by goal. All I want is just one extra goal. You know, if they get a goal, let's just get one back. Let's just make sure we've always got one above them, you know. And one thing that I said to the boys, I think it was, when was it? I think it was the LA split, so last split, winter split. I think it was, you know, let's just play until the referee calls stop. You know, let's just play until, you know, you see the end screen, win or loss. Let's just play until then. You know, and sort of obviously envisioning the win. And sort of that sort of helped us with a reverse sweep a few times actually. And it's one of those times where it's like, you know, let's not think about it. Bigger picture, let's just break it down step by step. We've done this step, bang, tick it off, next step, next step, next step. And, you know, different teams have a different way of looking at it, but it is a really good way to sort of understand that, you know, whether it be a giant mountain or whether it not be, that's all right. Let's just do it, you know. Let's just go there and do it.
And that's the crazy thing, too, with this roster. Not to rag on Cypical, it's not all his fault. It's just like our previous iteration of Space Station, Cypical, Reynolds, and Arsenal, we are a very momentum-based team. And it's like if we're getting absolutely destroyed, it's pretty much over, right? But with Daniel, it's like, damn, we can really come back. And it's crazy like what we can accomplish. Like what we did to Dignitas on stage is like probably the best feeling ever, like compared to anything that land.
Yep.
That we know that we can do in our hearts what we want, whatever we want. We can win this tournament. We can make strides towards winning just because we just did that against a top three team in Europe.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Oh, Cromie's feeling juiced. Look out, London.
I mean, we're not. It sucks. I mean, we're not boot camping for London, which sucks. Wasn't in the cards, and I feel wholeheartedly that boot camping is probably a good indicator that you're going to have a good success, because like I said, getting that body language and getting those discussions in person is just leaps and bounds better than online.
Yep.
So hopefully for this event, we accomplish what we want to accomplish. We don't know yet until we hit that stage, but obviously we're going to manifest, like we're going to try to go out there and win. Like we know we can beat Pioneers. We know we might have a good matchup against BDS just because of their play style.
Yep.
We know that what we want to accomplish, it's just going out there and performing. Right. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Making sure the vibes are good always.
Yeah, I think when you don't have a boot camp, and I think the most important thing is just being able to make sure that everyone's still dialed in, still connected, still having a chat with each other, still, you know, jumping on Discord every night and still having a bit of a talk and still just being able to enjoy each other, you know, enjoy talking to each other. And then, you know, eventually it's like, okay, let's go. Let's go and do it. We've had a chat. Let's just go out there and do it. Let's go out there and play a game.
That's just something that's been great too. Our GM's been an incredible help. He's in our scrims all the time, just being that second voice or outside voice, I guess, because, you know, I've been with the team for so long, you know, four person. We now have a fifth person who's just really supportive. He doesn't really know Rocket League in a sense of like how to, for strategy, but he knows like, you know, we can win, we can do this, just staying positive. And then hiring a mental coach that we now have too for, you know, one-on-ones is also really helpful too for the guys. Beautiful. Yeah, we've been putting in a lot of work in the staff end department for our team, and I feel like it's going to pay off for us for London for sure.
Love that. That makes me happy to hear that. Mental coach. Sheesh. Love that. Yeah, I think it's one of the things that I really enjoy doing, because obviously my background isn't traditionally as a coach. I obviously come on to come with the boys as a, you know, performance coach and worked with, you know, the other Renegades, you know, previous Valorant team, and, you know, the Apex boys to help with their, you know, nutrition, exercise, sleep, stretches, all that sort of stuff, all that good stuff. And being able to sort of have that up your sleeve as well, I think it's a major card, because some teams don't have access to that, right? And, you know, whether it's we so like healthy. It or not, it's a massive leverage that we can use and utilize.
It goes to having that like support staff. Like when I first started coaching, I didn't have a girlfriend. Then I had a girlfriend. It's just like I'm able to, you know, vent and be able to like mentally recover and get her point of view on what she thinks, and maybe see a different aspect of it, different point of view, which helps me build upon myself and build upon what I want to accomplish when it comes to next time I address my team or what we want to do. And it just helps me mentally reset. And just like also like having a mental coach, going back towards that, it's like there's times where you don't feel like you could voice your opinion really well. And then having someone that you can vent to, it's just like, it's so healthy. Mm-hmm. It's super healthy. You'd be like, damn, really? Okay. someone understands my point of view, understands like everything that I'm trying to, you know, point out and reinforce that and not judge you as well, which is awesome.
Yeah.
It is super healthy for your mental.
Yeah. Because if you don't have that outlet, then I guess where's it going? It's going nowhere. It's staying inside, right? I think if
it's festering. That's I'll give you that. It's festering.
It's festering. It's building. It's building.
I've been in that like player atmosphere too, where it's like I was a player. I had no one I vented to. It's just like it builds up, man. And sometimes it comes out eventually, and not in good ways most of the time.
Yeah, for sure. Do you think that, you know, eventually over time we will see that, you know, maybe all organizations are looking towards this sort of, you know, mental approach for players, supporting them with that sort of outlet and supporting them with their, you know, health outside of the game? It's going to become the normative almost?
I mean, it should be. Like, I mean, we've already seen it with other esports like League of Legends, but then those guys, they probably scrim all day from the morning. They all work out together. They all have mental coaches. They have their own chefs, nutritionists. Like, that stuff, if you don't have to focus on that stuff, it just makes life so much easier for you. Mm-hmm. You can just focus on your craft at hand. And especially with younger guys, with the scene how it is now, it's like you're 15.
Yeah.
These guys probably have never played sports before. They probably don't have any social experiences, anything, right? Life experiences. Having someone do everything for you and like help you along the way, it goes a long way for your mental. And these younger kids, man, they're emotional, right? At the end of the day, and making sure they're just locked in and understanding if things don't go our way, we can bounce back. And that's like the ultimate end game, right? Yeah. And that's something that we're continuing to work towards. And I feel like eventually every esport is going to get to that point where you kind of have to have a secondary coach, like mental coach or whatever, or just that extra support staff. Cause it just, eventually everything gets same old, right? Like if I'm with the team for however long, maybe my point of view is, you know, maybe they get sick of it. Cause you know, eventually like there is going to be like strife and confrontation and arguments and debates. Mm-hmm. And it's just, it happens. It's normal. Like there's no sunshine and rainbows when it comes to team atmospheres and team environments.
Yeah.
There's a lot of dirty stuff that happens in terms of like, wow, we've been at each other's throats. But then out of nowhere, the next week we win a tournament. That's been happening in every esport. I mean, I can also like attribute that to just like constantly working towards the same goal, right? And it's not going to be easy. And it's like looking back to like season six, like when I talked about like Cloud9 winning that Worlds, man, they had a lot of strife in their team. And then out of nowhere, they win the event. It's like, what? it's crazy, man. It's not easy.
It is. Yeah. I like that perspective, and I really appreciate that perspective as well, especially when you know, used to be a player as well, and just the importance of having that. And I think it's I think it's really good to sort of almost juxtapose it, whereby, you know, you were previously a player and you were sort of thinking, if only I had someone to reach out to. And now it's like, you're in a coaching position and you're helping these younger guys, and it's like, you know, they have someone to reach out to. And it's sort of almost that self-fulfillment in a way, potentially.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm not perfect, right? I'm learning and learning every single day, like what I could do better, and self-reflection a lot is really healthy. And there's days, obviously, like you said, going back is like, damn, I wish I could have said this or I could have done this better. But you really can't change the past. It's the same thing of Rocket League. Like, okay, you own gold. Okay, what's next? Like, you can't sit there and dwell on your mistakes. You just got to go forward and try to do your best in the future.
100%. Love that, man. Love it. Now, with obviously, you know, time's ticking away, days are counting down. We've got London soon. Then we've got, obviously, you know, I know Worlds, but then there's something in between Worlds, and that's obviously Saudi.
Yes.
So how are you boys? What's your boys' take on Saudi? Because I think a lot of the teams that I've had a chat to, I guess had a chat with Eclipse last week, and he's, from his perspective, it's like literally teams are going to be using Saudi. It's just a boot camp. It's just going to be like scrimming teams that are going to Worlds, sort of just having a bit of an extended boot camp almost. Or are you going to see it as a separate tournament and really, really, really strive for it?
I mean, we're trying to win. That's a lot of money for crew battles. And I feel like, I mean, we're going to try to win it. We have a good dynamic for our team. Obviously, it's just going out there and performing. We're trying to go out there and win it. But yeah, I mean, at the end of the day, land practice is land practice. It's at the end of the day, the ultimate end game is Worlds. So it's just extra practice. Obviously, the only flaws is it's in Saudi Arabia, so it's like long flights and and it's gonna suck just flying. Well, I'm excited, man, just to, you know, experience the culture out there and just see sights, right? You don't get to travel much. Like, when are you ever going to say you've gone to Saudi Arabia?
Oh, I was going to say the exact same thing.
It's like, you know, yeah, it's the same. Like, it's cool, man. Like, when I first went to London, when I competed, like, never been into London before, it was awesome. Like, that makes your headspace super healthy, too. Because when I competed in back then in London, we made land. We boot camped a week before, and we were exploring the city, doing a bunch of different things, eating different types of food.
Yeah.
Yada, yada. And it's just like, that whole boot camp just makes you feel comfortable as a team. And that's like why I think boot camps are like an ultimate cheat code when it comes to competing. So for us, it's like an early boot camp going into that event. And then obviously we're flying back for a week and then going right to our next boot camp for Worlds. So it's like, it sucks like the whole traveling, but you know, it's going to be fun though. It's going to be a fun experience.
Yeah.
You don't ever get them often. So
exactly.
Can't complain.
Yeah. You just sort of make the most of it. It is a bit of traveling, but you make the most of it. And it's kind of weird for us because obviously, you know, as you know, we're in a weird position where it's like we're just patiently waiting. We're waiting for that London major to see if we make Worlds. And then if we make Worlds, that'll be an absolutely treat. So it's just playing that waiting
game.
Yeah,
you got to wait. Yeah, but for us, it's like when it comes to like we're boot camping for Saudi, we honestly, if anything, the problem that we have right now, we don't even know if we want to scrim in the crew battle formats or just scrim European teams or –
I didn't even think about that.
Teams in terms of like 3v3 just for Worlds.
I don't know, we
haven't decided. Might just play ranked or whatever and go from there, but we'll decide. Because that's tough. It's just a different format. No one's really used to it. Me especially, like how to adjust my coaching when it comes to that. That's something I got to work towards.
Yeah, I actually didn't even think about it. That's a really good point you bring up. The fact that a team's going to be scrimming in the crew battle format. Like, are people just going to be like, I'll invite you to a ones game. Let's just play ones for 30 minutes or 40 minutes.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's why, like, just completely off topic, like, imagine if they changed the RLCS format to that. It's like, oh, man, complete shift of everything that you've known before.
That would be crazy. Do you reckon there'd be a massive uproar if they did that?
Oh, of course. No. Of course, you're going to have a massive uproar. But it'd be cool, though. Imagine, like, having, like, a four-man, five-man roster, like, of just, like, select specialists. In terms of ones or twos. Yeah. That'd be pretty cool just to think about. Not gonna lie.
Yeah. Genuinely. And John just said in the chat, teams are not at Worlds, probably practice twos and ones anyway.
Yep, that's
true. Which
is a
good point. So, yeah.
That's exactly true, yeah.
I'm just interested to see because obviously there's sort of those meta teams that, you know, I guess not a lot of people, you know about or hear about or even see playing. So I'm interested to see how some of those guys go as well because obviously there's quite a few meta teams involved.
Definitely gonna hit up the ball chasing to figure out some of those teams. I don't know any like outside of like two teams. I don't know the rest of the region, so it's like I don't know how many teams they're sending out to that Saudi event. I don't think it's been announced, but just really trying to understand how those players play and try to help my players get a better footing when it comes to the preparation.
Yeah, love that. Awesome, phenomenal. Now I guess as we turn the engine off and we start to roll down the hill towards the end of the episode, there's an end segment on MindClickers that I absolutely love to do. And I guess that's, you know, basically for maybe they're a bubble player or maybe they're looking to get into competitive esports. Let's go with bubble player for this episode. Say they're a bubble player, they're, you know, maybe getting, top 32s, top 16s, around that area. What advice would you give to some of these guys, some of these teams that are looking to really push towards making it into RLCS and making it into consistent, performances?
Man, that's tough, right? Because obviously a lot of it's luck, right? But if I would say is just be a good person, and in terms of that, like, just treat everyone around you with respect. Nice. Don't get an ego in terms of like just be a nice person, be someone that you want to be, other people want to be around. Like, perfect example, Daniel. Everyone loves him from ranked, like his, like, you know, talking to the broken comms and just be an absolute joy to be around. And on top of that, be really good, right? That's another thing. Everyone can be really good, but only a few can really, you know, translate it to professional play. And I would say just like find enjoyment out of it. Don't really just make it to where you're like, oh, I want to be the best. And because you're not going to get the results that you want, right? And at the end of the day, it's going to take a lot of time. And I would just say put your head down, grind, network. I think networking is the most powerful thing when it comes to competing,
mm-hmm.
knowing how to talk to people and make sure that, you know, you're not that type of guy who no one wants to be around, I would say. But and then making sure you have the understanding that it's not going to be right away. It might not never come at all. Just mm-hmm. enjoy the process. That's the main thing. Enjoy the process.
Enjoy the journey, not the final destination.
Yep.
Love that. Massive from you, Rob. I really appreciate that. I think that I know that a lot of guys really look forward to this, that sort of end segment, that end sort of takeaway from the guest. So, yeah, I really think that a lot of guys will really take that to heart and really enjoy that. So I really appreciate that from you. Awesome. Now, I guess for everyone listening in to the episode, where can we find you on all of your social medias? Where can we find the big man?
Oh, man. I mean, I used to stream, but not anymore. I mean, if I do decide to stream out of the blue moon, I guess, you can find me at Chrome on Twitch. My main Twitter, I don't even know what my Twitter is, honestly. And I only really am on Twitter at ChromeRL. That's my, yeah, I've been kind of, ever since I've been getting older, I've been kind of pushing everything to the wayside when it comes to like social media and all that stuff, even though I shouldn't, but mm-hmm. you know, here we are.
I think we all get
to that point. Yeah, at ChromeRL. There you go.
Beautiful. I'll also put it in the episode description and everywhere down below on the episode as well on Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts as well. So in case you were looking for that direct link, make sure to look in the description below. But look, Rob, it's been absolutely a pleasure to jump with you today and really share some insights about your previous, I guess, playing career, coaching career with NRG and SSG as well. And really sort of have that sort of dynamic because I absolutely, you know, value a wealth of experience within the Rocket League scene and a wealth of experience in the coaching scene. So, you know, I really appreciate you jumping on and sharing some of the insight for some of the guys who are looking to get into esports, looking to take it to the next level, even parents who are curious about, you know, what their kids are getting into and what their kids are maybe even looking forward to. So, again, really appreciate you coming on and having a chat and sharing those ideas.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor to be here.
No worries. Take care and I'll see you in the next one.